definitely need to re-examine and have a deeper conversation. I think members of Congress in previous years have not done their oversight duties in trying to go after and investigate some of these actions that have been taken. It's important for us to also realize that we don't just have the known, you know, military posts that people often talk about. But there are military actions that are taking place in countries like Somalia, where we talk about being an advisory, but we are literally engaged in activities of war. You know, Somalia is obviously challenged by terrorism. Al-Shabaab is, you know, a terrorist organization. They are causing havoc to lives of citizens in Somalia. Many of the people that are being displaced in Somalia right now are not being displaced because of the civil war that displaced my family when I was a child. They're being displaced because of terrorism and because of climate change.
We're going to have to leave it there. Minnesota Congressmember Ilhan Omar. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
Tune in to KBOO on Friday, March 11th at 8 p.m. for KBOO's Music That Moves You Dance Marathon! Yeah! As a part of our All Thrills, No Frills special programming campaign, The Blooming Universe presents music that moves you in almost every genre and era, dance music, 12-hour marathon. How do you express yourself via dance? Do you thrash, two-step, or shoulder lean? Do you enjoy the cha-cha, the running man, or tango? Are you stoked on the chicken noodle soup, mashed potato, or do you just love eating mashed potatoes? I know I do. DJ Kabloom and friends will provide a whimsical, creative, funky, silly, groovy, bombastic, and extra rad venue for you all to be the dancing queen you were always meant to be. Again, that's KBOO's Music That Moves You Marathon starting at 8 p.m. and carrying on through Saturday morning.
Daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon makes its first drought declaration of 2022, nearly a month earlier than last year. Lawmakers move to ban Russian energy imports as gas prices in the U.S. reach a record high. And Ukraine evacuates civilians from besieged cities while more than 2 million people flee the Russian assault. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, March 8th, 2022. I'm Yasmin Kobanoglu. Oregon Governor Kate Brown announced the first drought declaration of the year in the state on Monday, coming nearly a month earlier than last year. The drought declaration is for Klamath County, which borders California in southern Oregon. The declaration means that officials with the state believe low snowpack, reservoir levels, and stream flow have caused or will cause natural and economic disaster conditions in the county. Drought has been an issue for southern Oregon for the past few years. The Klamath Basin in particular has had low water levels for 3 years in a row. The governor made the declaration at the request of officials in Klamath County and based on recommendations by the state's Drought Readiness Council and Water Supply Availability Committee. According to the declaration, forecasted water supply conditions and precipitation levels are not expected to improve, and drought is likely to have a significant economic impact on the agriculture and natural resources sectors, as well as drinking water, fish, and wildlife. The drought conditions are also expected to increase the potential for wildfires. In addition, Oregon's Department of Agriculture can use the drought emergency to help the county seek federal drought mitigation resources and assist in agricultural recovery. Forecasted rain and snow in mid-March may offer some relief for the region, but experts say it's not enough to reverse the drought by summer. An Oregon State Trooper is the target of a class action lawsuit claiming the drug interdiction cop underreported stops and targeted minorities. KBOO's Josh Salem has more on the story.
A class action lawsuit has been filed against the Oregon State Police and Trooper Travis Peterson. The lawsuit, filed on behalf of 8 participants, makes accusations of racial discrimination and other forms of misconduct. The lawsuit claims Peterson pulled the persons over along Interstate 5 for minor traffic violations in order to search their vehicles for drugs or money. One plaintiff alleges he was pulled over because his passenger side seat was reclined too far back. A memo from the Jackson County District Attorney's Office allegedly states that Peterson had hidden or not reported about 1/3 of his traffic stops over the 9 months surveyed. The plaintiff's lawyer, Justin Rosas, said they are suing to hold Peterson accountable, but also, quote, to try and confront the scheme of policing that allows someone to racially profile people on the interstate, end quote. Jackson County District Attorney Beth Heckert said they have no evidence of racial discrimination by Peterson and that there's no indication he was trying to be deceptive by not reporting his stops. The Oregon State Police say they take allegations of racial discrimination seriously. They have also stated the 8 plaintiffs were charged with crimes as a result of their traffic stops. However, Rosa says those charges were dropped because the searches were found to be unconstitutional. Peterson is currently on unrelated paid leave. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Fatal alcohol-related traffic accidents increased in Portland during the pandemic. According to a press release on Friday by the city's Transportation Bureau, at least 43 deaths occurred in 2020 and 2021 that police say had alcohol involved. In the years prior to the pandemic, more than a third of traffic fatalities in Portland involved alcohol. Dylan Rivera, a spokesperson for the Portland Bureau of Transportation, noted that while it can take a few years for hard data to come through, they have observed an uptick in alcohol-related traffic fatalities since the COVID-19 pandemic began. Rivera says that the increase is aligned with trends across the nation. Consuming alcohol drastically impairs your ability to drive safely. The risk of killing or seriously injuring yourself or others while driving increases significantly when drinking alcohol, even in small quantities. Oregon currently has a blood alcohol limit of 0.08%, but charges can still be made if a sobriety test is failed at a traffic stop. Rivera says driving should be avoided even after just one drink. Ukraine accused Russia of targeting civilians as the conflict entered its 13th day on Tuesday. Ukraine began evacuating residents from the besieged city of Sumy along the first safe corridor created since the invasion began. While fierce Ukrainian resistance has been able to stall the Russian ground assault, Moscow has been ramping up its air attacks, fueling an exodus of refugees that has now reached 2 million people, with more than half seeking sanctuary in neighboring Poland. The outgunned Ukrainian Air Force got a boost on Tuesday when Poland announced that it would give Ukraine all of its Russian-made MiG-29 fighter planes. In Ukraine's south, efforts to secure safe passage from the encircled port city of Mariupol appeared to have failed once again. The foreign ministry accused Russia of violating another ceasefire agreement by shelling the humanitarian corridor near the southern city, where trucks and buses were ready to deliver aid and evacuate residents. As cities across the country struggled under Russian bombardment, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Monday sought to boost morale, showing he was at work in Kyiv rather than in hiding. He promised to rebuild the country while condemning Russian forces for targeting civilian infrastructure like bread factories and churches. Ukraine's military said it had stalled the Russian advance in an update early Tuesday. But the country's defense minister warned that Russian forces were gathering for a new wave of attacks on key areas, including the capital Kyiv and Kharkiv, the country's second largest city. Russian President Vladimir Putin has shown no signs of pulling back in the face of fierce resistance, and his military might significantly overpowers Ukraine's, a fact that Zelensky highlighted on Tuesday. Civilians have increasingly borne the brunt of Russian airstrikes, with hospitals, schools, residential buildings, and vital infrastructure coming under fire. According to the UN Human Rights Agency, more than 400 civilians have been killed in Ukraine since the invasion began. Experts have said the exact figures are likely to be much higher. Lawmakers in the U.S. have struck a bipartisan deal on legislation to ban Russian energy imports. The leaders of the House Ways and Means Committee and the Senate Finance Committee announced Monday that they have reached a deal to pass legislation that would ban the import of energy products, including oil, from Russia. President Joe Biden has not committed to a ban on Russian oil, and it remains unclear if he will sign the legislation if it reaches his desk. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki told reporters, quote, "No decision has been made at this point by the president about a ban importing oil from Russia," end quote. Psaki said the topic of an oil ban was raised in Biden's call with European leaders earlier in the day, and she noted that the U.S. is much less dependent on Russian oil than Europe. The legislation in Congress also calls for a suspension in normal trade relations with Russia and its ally, Belarus. The bill would provide the president with authority to further increase tariffs on products from those two countries and would require the U.S. Trade Representative seek the suspension of Russia's participation in the World Trade Organization. The congressional deal comes as Biden has been facing increasing pressure by lawmakers, including members of his own party, to ban Russian oil imports as it ramps up attacks on Ukraine. After days of gas prices rising in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the national average per gallon of gas is now the highest in U.S. history. As of Tuesday morning, the price of regular gas in the U.S. is on average $4.17 per gallon, up from $4.06 on Monday. Just last week, the average cost per gallon was $3.60. The previous national average high was set on July 17, 2008, at $4.11. The cost for diesel fuel is also rising, with the current average price at $4.75 per gallon, over double what it was in October of 2020. One of the main reasons for rising prices at the pump is the ongoing invasion of Ukraine by Russian forces. Russia is one of the largest oil producers in the world, along with the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. Currently, California has the most expensive gas prices in the country, averaging $5.44 a gallon as of Tuesday. In Mono County, California, which borders Nevada, the average price is $6.02. Oregon has the fourth most expensive gas prices in the nation, averaging $4.58 per gallon as of Tuesday. Congress passed legislation on Monday that for the first time would make lynching a federal hate crime in the U.S. The bill now heads to President Joe Biden's desk to be signed into law. The Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act is among more than 200 bills that have been introduced over the past century that have tried to ban lynching in the U.S. The bill is named for Emmett Till, a black teenager whose brutal killing in Mississippi in 1955 and his mother's insistence on an open funeral casket to show the world what had been done to her child became an integral moment in the civil rights movement. The bill would make it possible to prosecute a crime as a lynching when a conspiracy to commit a hate crime results in death or serious bodily injury. The maximum sentence under the Anti-Lynching Act is 30 years. The House overwhelmingly approved a similar measure in 2020, but it was blocked in the Senate. Last week, the House approved a revised version and the Senate passed the bill unanimously late Monday. Democratic Representative Bobby Rush of Illinois said the legislation, quote, "sends a clear and emphatic message that our nation will no longer ignore this shameful chapter of our history and that the full force of the U.S. federal government will always be brought to bear against those who commit this heinous act," end quote. Florida is one of 19 states that doesn't allow medication abortions by telemedicine and mail. but an Austria-based provider is helping patients instead. Dutch physician Dr. Rebecca Gompertz runs Aid Access, which prescribes abortion pills to be filled by a doctor in India and shipped to U.S. patients. Maya LaPearl has more on the story.
With a decision looming in the U.S. Supreme Court that could decide the fate of Roe v. Wade, some Floridians are finding creative ways to obtain abortion pills online. Florida is one of the 19 states that prohibits clinicians from prescribing abortion medication by telemedicine and mail. But the Austria-based organization Aid Access is working to help people get around that. Dutch physician Rebecca Gompertz formed Aid Access in 2018 after seeing women in the U.S. struggle to get or afford abortions.
We want to make the service available for women that have little to no money, because one of the main obstacles to abortion care in the U.S. that we found is actually the cost.
When someone contacts Aid Access for an abortion, the consultation begins with an online form. A team of doctors reviews it and asks the patient for identification. Then Gompertz prescribes the medications, which are filled by a pharmacy in India and shipped to the patient in the U.S. Gompertz charges about $115, 95 euros, with a sliding fee scale depending on ability to pay. She says the pills usually take 2 to 3 weeks to arrive. Gompertz says Aid Access also provides what are known as advanced provision pills, medication prescribed for someone to have on hand in case they get pregnant. She says the delay between a person finding out they're pregnant and finding an abortion provider can make the process more difficult.
It's much better for somebody to take it like really early in pregnancy, than it's like a delayed menstruation, instead of when it's later and it becomes like a miscarriage with more bleeding and more pain and more stress. So I think this should be like the morning after pill. It should just be available.
Gompertz feels the reason these pills are not readily available is based not on medical science, but politics. Recent research shows that Aid Access telehealth abortion services are safe and effective, with over 98% of users highly satisfied with the service. Gompertz says buying abortion pills isn't against the law, but people who have questions about the legal risk can contact reprolegalhelpline.org. She adds, if someone has to go to the hospital with complications, it's the same procedure as for a miscarriage, and they don't need to disclose that they took the pills.
This is also really about empowering women and pregnant people who do their own abortion, which they have a right to do, with medicines, and empower them that they understand that they shouldn't be intimidated by police or anybody else, actually, by anybody that wants to intimidate them.
For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Maya LaPearl.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on the I-5 bridge replacement project to replace the bridge over the Columbia River between Portland and Vancouver, Washington. Then at 6, it's Preference. And at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be rainy with a low of 38 degrees. Tomorrow will again be rainy with a high of 46 degrees. Today in history, in 1917, the February Revolution begins in Russia, when riots and strikes over the scarcity of food erupt in Petrograd. 1 week later, centuries of Tsarist rule in Russia ended with the abdication of Nicholas II, and Russia took a dramatic step closer toward communist revolution. The quote of the day is from Jordanian British author and human rights activist Fadia Fakir, who said, quote, "You don't liberate a country standing on the soil of another," end quote. The UN calls for safe passage for civilians out of Ukraine, and the Supreme Court denies challenges to Pennsylvania and North Carolina's congressional maps. With more on the story, it's Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Safety for civilians in Ukraine is not a problem for Russian, because we're not bombarding them, but rather Ukrainian radicals and neo-Nazis who are holding hostage whole towns and cities and are making use of citizens as a human shield.
On day 12 of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Russia's UN ambassador denied its troops are preventing civilians from fleeing the violence, With reports of at least 400 civilian deaths, UN Security Council members called for a ceasefire and additional humanitarian corridors. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby says 500 additional U.S. military support personnel are headed to the region.
We are not and will not send forces into Ukraine. So these additional personnel will be going to NATO's eastern flanks.
In a new poll, 82% of Ukrainians believe the country can repeal Russia's attacks. 63% of respondents believe the country's armed forces are behind the nation's strength, while 58% said military support from the West would be key to victory. Hundreds of truckers who want the national emergency declaration for COVID canceled circled the Capitol Beltway for a second day but did not cause any major disruptions. Brian Brossi with the People's Convoy urged the group to stay out of the city.
I have to worry about the safety of each and every single one of you, and I don't want that on my conscience that I brought people down there and bad stuff happened.
And a D.C. magistrate judge cautioned the Justice Department it might be trampling on the rights of January 6 defendants. The comments came during the trial of a Texas man who the judge said had languished in custody for 6 weeks due to the massive scope of the federal investigation. More than 750 people have been charged. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eight trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
First Lady Jill Biden visited members of the Gila River Indian community on Monday to promote the president's State of the Union priorities. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. First Lady Jill Biden was greeted by members of the Gila River Indian community Monday during a stop in Phoenix. The First Lady will visit the Tohono O'odham Nation during a stop in Tucson on Tuesday. Her trip to Arizona is to promote President Biden's policy priorities, which were highlighted in his State of the Union address. President Biden mentioned tribes in his speech last week when talking about providing high-speed internet for every American. A number of issues he touched on in the address are priorities for tribes, from job creation to strengthening the Violence Against Women Act. President Jonathan Nez of the Navajo Nation says he was pleased to hear President Biden's message.
Well, he did mention Indian country in his speech. That was encouraging. I thought he did an excellent job on the delivery of his address. Very inspiring towards the end there. I know the attention is on Ukraine, what's happening there. Navajo Nation is standing with the citizens of Ukraine as well. We took a position there to make sure that, we pray for our brothers and sisters there in Ukraine and, protecting their sovereign ability to govern.
Nez says the Navajo Nation is also exploring its investments to see if there are any ties to Russia.
And we're even looking into our investments. Are there any investments from the Russian government or anything Russian so that we can reevaluate some of our relations with Russia, the government, and Putin? So I think other tribes are going to be doing that. I know states are not purchasing Russian goods, even boycotting some of those. I think we also need to look at the bigger picture, the investments, international investments, reevaluating our portfolio. And right now I'm just getting a rundown on anything associated with the Russian government, and we got to cut our ties. And I think we got to do that in Indian country as well.
The First Lady marked International Women's Day Tuesday, honoring women around the world and recognizing women in the Ukraine. The First Lady will also take part in a Women's History Month event following her tribal visit. The House Natural Resources Committee is examining the history of tribal co-management of federal lands. The committee hearing, which convened Tuesday morning, is said to be the first time in congressional history to examine tribal land dispossession enacted by the federal government and its impact on management practices. The hearing is exploring the historical and legal support for tribal co-management, including the use of traditional knowledge. Tribal leaders, directors of Native organizations, and the director of the National Park Service are among witnesses. The Park Service director, Charles Chuck Sams, made history in December when he was sworn in as the first tribal citizen to lead the agency. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
As Russian President Vladimir Putin continues his assault on Ukraine, Russia's currency is nosediving, the market is in panic, and frantic residents are trying to withdraw savings from empty ATMs. Meanwhile, anti-war protesters are joined by members of the billionaire elite who have broken rank against their embattled president, who is being seen increasingly as a pariah. When Putin launched his war on Ukraine, not many predicted that the conflict would have such immediate consequences for the Kremlin and the Russian people. This nightmare for Putin could be the world's silver lining in a violent, unprovoked war that has become the worst refugee crisis in Europe since World War II. Now we go to global citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
In the midst of the Ukraine crisis, with great loss of life and property, it might be unseemly to suggest that there are silver linings. But the crisis does have a few, and they amount to a nightmare for Vladimir Putin. One is the exceptional heroism of the Ukrainian people, civilian and military, especially President Zelensky, who have risen to the defense of their country. They have defied the experts, especially those in Moscow, who believed Ukraine would be an easy target, vulnerable to quick defeat and occupation. Ukraine's ordinary folks have refused to surrender and instead become citizen soldiers, and very effective ones at that. A second is the reality of Vladimir Putin. Until he ordered this war, he had been riding high in international circles. Various opinion writers in the West had portrayed Putin as a man who could do no wrong, how he had masterfully managed the war in Syria, the seizure of Crimea, relations with China, and Donald Trump. Now, needless to say, he is revealed as a bungling, overzealous tyrant who has isolated Russia and badly overreached in Ukraine. And in doing so, he has given a much-needed boost to pro-democracy forces in Europe, who have been engaged for several years in a difficult battle with white nationalists like Putin. Those political leaders in Italy, Hungary, France, and elsewhere who thought the world of Putin and looked to him for support must surely be keeping their heads down now. The emperor has turned out to have no clothes. The third silver lining may be the most important in the long run, the coming together of democratic nations in solidarity with Ukraine. Prior to the Russian invasion, questions were raised about NATO's unity and commitment to Europe's defense. Germany in particular was cited for its hesitancy to support Ukraine. The debate about sanctions on Russia gave the impression that they would only be partially supported in the alliance. But not only has the speculation proved groundless, some countries have broken with past practice to make important contributions to the Ukraine cause. In all, 17 of NATO's 30 member countries have sent military aid to Ukraine. Putin's war has turned out to be just what NATO and other friendly states needed in coming together in common cause. Here are some specifics. The European Union will for the first time ever purchase and deliver weapons to a country under attack. Its members will close their airspace to Russian civil and private aircraft. They will ban Russian broadcasts. The huge outpouring of Ukrainians to Poland and beyond so far seems to be accommodated, though it stands in sharp contrast with the removal of welcome mats for non-white refugees from the Middle East and Africa. EU countries have also lined up behind terminating Russian access to the SWIFT international payments network. The one thing the EU might not be ready to do is rush to grant Ukraine membership in it. The British government said it would not stand in the way of citizens who want to go to Ukraine to fight the Russians. Its foreign minister said those resisting the Russians were, quote, fighting for freedom and democracy, not just for Ukraine, but for the whole of Europe. In Germany, Chancellor Olaf Scholz announced a one-time increase of 100 billion euros for defense spending and a pledge to spend more than 2% of Germany's economic output annually on defense. The announcement came as Germany made new commitments of military aid to Ukraine, commitments that represent a break with German policy of not sending military aid to war zones. Sweden and Finland likewise broke tradition, announcing they would give military aid to a country in armed conflict for the first time. Both countries are weighing applying to NATO for membership, another groundbreaking development. Even normally neutral Switzerland has frozen Russian assets. Turkey, which not so long ago had mended fences with Russia in an arms deal and over the war in Syria, is banning Russian warships from the straits that connect the Black Sea to the south. Hungary's government, usually friendly toward Moscow, has come out in favor of EU sanctions. The international isolation of Russia must surely be a jarring experience for Putin and his inner circle. But it's a situation of his own making, one likely to persist for many years. There are already stirrings of discontent among the Russian elite as financial and commercial transactions dry up, travel is restricted, and personal bank accounts are frozen. Where previously we wondered if Ukraine could survive, we now have reason to wonder if Putin will survive. In any case, let's support two rules going forward. Don't box Putin into a corner that might lead him to irrational decision-making. And second, don't let outrage at Putin get in the way of sympathy with ordinary Russians who are victims of his warmongering. Thanks for listening. I'm Mel Gertov for The Global Citizen.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, March 8th, 2022. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Caitlin Backus, Mel Gertov, Maya LaPearl, and Josh Salem. The producer is Yasmin Kobanoglu, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez and Mary Sherman. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. I'm Yasmin Kobanoglu. Stay tuned now for an in-depth report on the I-5 bridge replacement project.
KBOO News In-Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Many folks may not realize it, but when you drive from Oregon to Washington on I-5, you're driving over a 100-year-old bridge. The bridge has shown its age, not just in its impact on traffic or its vulnerability in the face of the big one. So what could a new, better bridge entail? I spoke with the Interstate Bridge Replacement Program's program administrator,